The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What's happening, guys? Happy Friday! And thank you for joining another special episode of Your Welcome. I am at the NCAA Wrestling Tournament, the real March Madness. But before I left, I squeezed in another podcast episode just for you guys. And coming up, I'm going to talk about UFC 301, Jake Paul versus Mike Tyson, and what the heck is going on with Chito Vera. I'm going to get into all of that, but before we arrive there, I want to talk about the big story that has been dominating the headlines this week. Conor McGregor just did an interview, and it was amongst the most telling interviews that Conor McGregor has ever done. Conor McGregor has been more straight and direct with you, the audience, ever since he returned to the pool. So we'll put that about November of last year, but he has been more straight and direct with you, the audience, than he has ever been. And I'm not sure you're aware. So Conor, in all fairness, has always been pretty straight with you guys. It's just been so entertaining, and a lot of it was promotional, so we chalked it up to hype. But it really wasn't meant to be. Now, for right now, I'm going back from the beginning. When Conor splashed onto the scene in 2013, when he was saying, I'm going to knock this guy out, it's going to be in the second round. When he did the entire Mystic Mac routine, when he did the whole, I'm going to beat Jose Aldo and I'm going to finish him. I'm going to go over to boxing and I'm going to give Floyd problems, right? I mean, when he did this entire thing, all of that was hype and all of that was interesting, and all of that helped to drive tickets and get headlines and control press conferences. But the other side of the coin, he was telling you the truth. He was telling you his truth. I mean, he was just telling you something that he believed. He believed he could stop Jose Aldo. He believed he was the best in the world. He believed he could capture the crown in two different weight classes. I mean, in all fairness, like he's not always been a guy that just comes out and entertains. He does often speak with you. But I don't know that you've recognized it. And that's why I'm giving you the example of the specific return date of November when he re-entered the testing pool. From then until now is a completely different Conor. No matter how entertained you are or how funny or fun you think it is, he is speaking to you. And he's speaking to you like a partner. He understands the power that you have. He has always understood the power and influence that you have, which is why he has always brought you along on the journey of his career. But I'm just sharing with you, he's speaking to you different. And I'm taking the time to break this down for you because you haven't responded yet. If you're his tag team partner, he's got his hand out. He's in the ring, he's got his hand out, and you can reach him, but you haven't. My belief, or at least the experiment that I would like to test, is have you not tagged in because you're not interested and unwilling to help? Or is it because you don't know that his hand's out and he's asking you? So the only thing Conor has ever sold, and I choose to use that term, the only thing that he's ever sold that he didn't have, right? Like, he sold confidence. I can do this and I can do it at two different weights. I can do it in two different sports. He sold confidence, but he had it. His pockets were full of them. If you were buying, he could start handing it out. He sold entertainment. He got into where he was selling fashion, and he did this very early on back in the bow ties. I mean, if you go back and look at him now, you won't know that he looks sharp because those are $80 outfits, but that was all the money in the world that he had. I mean, he was dressing up and he was doing it for you guys. He was coming in with glasses. Those were the nicest threads that he could get a hold of. everything that Connor did and everything that he told you he had and everything that he sold to you, he actually was in possession of, except power. That's the only one that was a facade. And he did it very well. And it was so important to understand and observe how well he did it, how it worked, and why he knew it was important. I'm not going to break those three things down for you. There's your homework assignment. You got to go do that. But it did work. I remember top guys in our sport. Well, I'll just throw it out. My friend, Boss Rutten. Boss Rutten and Kenny Rice had a TV show. Boss went on that show, and it was something that Connor wanted. He had both belts back then. I think it might have even been the Floyd fight, but it was something that Connor wanted. And he was the 45 and the 55-pound champion. I remember Boss saying, well, they're going to have to do it. Connor's got all the power. And Boss Rutten is a world champion. He's a legend. I don't know that you could produce a name that goes back further than Boss Rutten. He's in the Hall of Fame. He was the host of the only MMA show on TV. I mean, right, Boss matters. And he believed it. He said it very matter of fact. Well, UFC is going to have to let Connor do it because he's got the power. And it was a major moment for me where I stood back and go, wow, it worked. My goodness, this worked. Connor's flex has worked, right? Because perception is reality. If our industry believes that you have it and you get treated like you have, then you have it. 100%. You guys ever been threatened? Let me just give you a great example. Have you ever been threatened? Because the only power that a threat has is the power you allow it to have. A threat is nothing. It is nothing. Somebody could do it online. Whatever the threat is, whatever reaction it is that you have to it is now the power that that threat has. So I'm only sharing that with you because if people believe that Connor has power, they show him that respect, then he does. It's the same thing. And Connor started going a little bit far with it. I need ownership. I'm partners. Give me 3% of the company. Like, he started to go a little bit far to where it forced Dana to publicly answer these questions, which Dana never would have done. He would have let Connor run his shtick. He would have let Connor, let him get as far as he did, knowing he had no power. He had no ability to sign anybody. He had no ability to cut anybody. He had no ability to negotiate with and for anybody other than himself. And I'm only sharing that with you because Connor put out a piece. I watched it. I read about it. I watched it again. And I called my partner, Ryan, who had just watched it and who had just read about it. And we discussed and tried to break this down. There has never been a spot that Connor McGregor has ever done where he reveals to you, the audience, that he is having a hard time even getting communication with the UFC. I mean, before we get into a fight, before we get into a title fight, before we get into a draw, before we get into media days, he's got to get a phone call. Connor let it be known that they are not mad at one another. And there was not an event. We did not have something that went awry and I got up and stormed out. And we're yet to rebuild that bridge. There was nothing like that. The UFC very much defended and values Conor McGregor. Jeff Nowitzki and Hunter Campbell held a press conference when USADA publicly took shots at the UFC. And they defended themselves and their brand in the UFC. They defended the fact that they were the clients of USADA. Right? They are USADA's customer. And therefore, for USADA to put them down, they just really thought was a dirty thing to do. But they only defended one athlete by name. And that was Conor McGregor. So, I'm just sharing with you, like, when the UFC has had a chance to speak up, they also have made it known that nobody's mad at anybody here. But Conor just can't get this call back. He can't get that negotiation going. And when you reach that point with the UFC, it's not out of anger, and it's not even a negotiation tactic. When you reach that point with the UFC, it means that the UFC has come as far as they're going to come in whatever negotiation or talks that you're going to have. There is now nothing else to talk about. There's not going to be a compromise. There's not a way you're going to get the UFC off of a ledge. And therefore, there would be nothing to discuss. Here's where we're at until we can solve this problem. It's very relevant. UFC was in a very similar spot with Francis Ngannou, where Francis had one fight left. And the UFC said, well, and we need to change that. If you're a champion, we need to extend this. We need to get this deal hammered out and come to terms. And they never did. And that's okay. The clock ran out. And the Francis story is quite a successful one. But for Conor to reveal it, he's asking you guys to get behind him. He's letting you know. My message and my voice has gone as far as my message and voice can. I'm ready to fight, and I'm willing to fight anybody. I understand that's Michael Chandler. Fine, then Michael Chandler can be the anybody. But if something else comes up, and he asks for Nate Diaz specifically, he's asking to debut at the Spear, he's asked for some very cool things. And generally, that would be an offer. But one thing that Conor did say within this piece, and it does go back to the Sphere, and it does go back to Nate Diaz, is he said that that was publicly shot down. I don't remember that. But it is relevant, and I don't doubt that it happened. It's very relevant because the UFC is very consistent. And whatever their ideals are, and whatever their ideas are, it's very across the board. And to know that Conor is the sport's biggest star, you better believe. There's not even a close second. But there is a second. I believe Nate Diaz is that second. And the reason I bring that up is if the UFC didn't want Conor and Nate, which they've always said, Dana's always set up that trilogy and it lasts and we can do that anytime. But Nate isn't under contract with him at this point. So now you got to go in, you got to do a contract. It's this whole thing. Not to mention if it's the Sphere and it's those two, it's going to be a main event. It's going to be a pay-per-view. See, and now's where you're starting to understand that the UFC has ideas and an image and a way that they're going to go. And there's not going to be exceptions to it, whether that's age, whether that's going to the Sphere and main eventing a pay-per-view without a title. I mean, I'm just sharing. When Conor brought Nate in, we now know this wasn't secularism. So was it just Conor? Was it that Conor had done something wrong? It's not that Nate has done anything wrong. It's that in the direction they're going for their main event stars, they have a different vision. And Conor has his pride. And he's not going to say, I need help. But this is the closest thing. So I'm asking you for him. The reason he's telling you that, there is something. I personally believe it's the placement of the card. I personally believe they don't want to main event him. And I personally believe that Conor isn't going to fight on anything but a main event. And as the sport's biggest star and the highest paid athlete, he has cause. I mean, he's not just showing up empty-handed with his hand out. He has things that he is going to bring. And the opinion really is yours. You guys spoke up. You just did this with Bo Nickel. You just did this at 300, and you said his placement is a little bit too high. You just did that, and you had your reasons. Well, Bo Nickel's young. He's completely undefeated, and he's finished every opponent he's got. I mean, if a guy like that is getting resistance from you guys for opening a show, I'm only bringing that you voiced your opinion before, and you might see it different with Conor. The biggest star, and he is. Everything that you do in this sport, from winning the fight to getting the media, from combining these two, is so you can work your way up the card. And if you're the biggest star, you've earned it. Perhaps is your opinion. And now he's asking you to weigh in on your opinion. And you know what, guys? If you're on the other side of it, voice that too. If you believe the biggest star like Conor is at a point where he needs to pass the torch, go under, he needs to be a co-main event and open to set the stage for somebody else, voice it. Now's your time, and Conor is asking you to speak up. What does Michael Chandler get for fighting Conor McGregor? I mean, what I'm asking is, What is the delay? What is so appealing about fighting Conor McGregor? And I feel as though on the timeline of Chandler versus McGregor, if we address it, our answers would change, right? I mean, if something's true, if it's ever been true, then it should always be true, right? If it was true over here, it should be true today, but I don't feel like it is. I mean, by example, Red Panty Night is absolutely real. Conor's right. It is a celebration. Guys are lining up hoping to get McGregor. I don't fully remember how Chandler did. That was around March of last year. It was just about a year ago when we got this announcement. And they're going to go do the Ultimate Fighter, air the show. Those guys are going to be in the cage settling that up in November of last year. In fact, it was the card that went to Boston. O'Malley became champion of the world. Just to put in perspective for you, right? That's when everything got wrapped up. So when you have that time frame, when you have that timeline, when you're making your deals and your negotiation, you're shaking hands, you're doing the agreement, this is what you have in mind. And there would be nothing about that that would be extraordinary. It would be a very normal negotiation. So having Red Panty Night, having that celebration, having that excitement, while that is all true, there is not a built-in financial mechanism to it. There is more attention, and it's the attention that's fun. So in many ways, there's more fun than you've ever had. You're going to want that. You're going to go out and ask for that. The greatest marketing vehicle our sport has ever had is the Ultimate Fighter. So now you're also getting the Ultimate Fighter. And there's just not a part of that process where you're going to say, hey, I'll only do it if, and then you start to make your financial demands. That just wasn't the landscape. And I think it's important that we understand that. Chandler, at the time of the announcement of this fight, at the time that he drew the red panties, that he had the celebration, that he gets television show, was coming off of a loss to Dustin Poirier. So Chandler would have been feeling a little bit, hey, where do I go? And Chandler's very quick run. I mean, he's done everything. Become your guys' favorite. He's gotten his pop. He's reaching superstardom, right? I mean, Chandler is like must-see TV, but he fought for a belt. Top names. I mean, it's a very natural ebb and flow when you start working your way right out of that position, right on down the card. So while in that spot, coming off of a loss, I'm confused. What do I do? Everything Chandler had ever done in the sport was driven by one thing, which was championship aspirations. So when he ends up losing, I'm just sharing that Chandler would have probably been in a bit of a vulnerable state. There's just nothing about that time that I just laid out for you that would make a reasonable person believe that Chandler and company came in to the boardroom making demands. And I take the time to explain that and set that part up for you because I'm getting in front of something, right? When we look at the time frame of Conor Chandler getting announced, all the things that happened, all the things that USADA, I mean, just everything that happens. Okay, we're going to do it at 300. It's not 300. Okay, it's going to be International Fight Week and we find out it's not going to be. Okay, I want this fear, but you're not getting it. I mean, like, as everything comes along, the one argument that you've made the whole time, and I know you're going to continue to make, the belief that you have, is that the payout for Chandler is so significant because he's taking on the biggest star that it justifies missing. And where would Chandler be at this point? Four fights? If they do three fights a year, then at this part through, are we at four fights? But that can be justified because the Conor fight is so big and it's going to be such a payout and you can go ahead and wait. And I'm just suggesting for you that I don't think that it's true. There's not a belt on the line, just for example. It's not a championship match. So there's not pay-per-view participation. Nothing to guarantee that fight would even be on pay-per-view. I know that we know that would be, but what I'm sharing is there's nothing to guarantee that fight would be on pay-per-view. So I believe that Chandler would come from the perspective of, first off, patience and good old stubbornness, right? I was told something. I told other people I've relied on something. It is an experience that I want. It is a once in a lifetime. I have fought for belts. I have fought in main events. I have not fought in something this big because I haven't been in there with McGregor. I think we would all understand that. But I'm taking the time and I'm regressing and bringing you back to the financial side of it. Because when we ask how long should he wait, when we ask at all, should he wait? And ultimately we ask, well, how long can he wait? As a prize fighter who has a family, how long can he wait? And as we ask all of those things, the only thing I've ever gotten back from anybody is, well, the pay is so good. You made that up, right? Even if you're right, even if what I just said, my speculation is wrong, if there was some kind of a financial element for getting Red Panty, even if I'm wrong, you don't actually know that. Right. I mean, we haven't been told that, and it still does in lie for how long. So if it isn't financial, if the contract's the contract, and no matter who Chandler fights, that contract's going to be honored. There is nothing new being added because he was the lucky one that drew Red Panty Night and got to do The Ultimate Fighter. Then that doesn't mean it's not without pay. Like, Michael Chandler could very clearly look at that and say, this is an opportunity. This is a media opportunity. This is an exposure opportunity. Not only do I feel like, if I'm Michael Chandler, right? Not only do I feel that I have the ability to capitalize on the media, which he does. I mean, his little segment on Monday Night Raw, not for nothing. He didn't get paid for that either. Not for that helped. That was awesome. I was in Miami when they threw the cameras on him. He looked great. The crowd loved seeing him. I mean, I'm just sharing, like, Chandler's idea that I'm going to get all this media and I, by the way, have a skill. I know what to do with it. He's right. So if the belief is I'm going to get all that to fight Conor, I'm going to do well. I'm going to beat Conor. And I'm going to take this big bounce and I'm going to take that into me in my next fight and the next one. That is where the extra pay comes. That is the investment that I'm making right now. I don't think there's anything wrong with a single thing that we've heard so far. Now, as I stated with the timeline, that would have definitely been true last year. You start to question it when you're finding about the USADA and the pool business, that Connor's not in it. But you're going to rely on some good faith and you're told he's coming. He's doing a movie and he's coming. Okay, great. Well, he does. He comes. All right, great. That's perfect because the rumor is you're going to go to UFC 300. So you train, you prepare, and you hold out hope for that, and you find out that's inaccurate. But then you get told right by the man himself. Conor himself says we're going to do it on June 29th, International Fight Week, so you'll hold out hope, right? What I'm sharing is, as that timeline moves, what could be true and what was once true is not always going to be true. The bounce that Chandler could get if everything goes right and he's willing to bet and invest on himself, something that he's had to do his entire life, does make sense, but there's a timeline. It doesn't necessarily make sense. If we stretch this over 5 years just to really prove my point, and all of a sudden Chandler's 40 years old and there isn't a next fight and the next one, I mean, what would Chandler do? And would he change his mind if he was armed with the fact that the fight, the big one, the everything, the red pant, the all this attention, which is the only thing he's holding out for, is going to be a 3-round co-main event? Would he then change his mind? I'm not certain or suggesting for you that if Chandler changes his mind and we snap our fingers that he goes on to a pay-per-view above co-main event. So he would have to consider that too. Well, what happens if I do go my separate ways from Conor? Am I still in a co-spot? But one thing that comes along with Conor is all the attention because it's a main event. So then if you get armed with the fact that, no, it's not. No, the company is not confident. He's got two fights left. He's not talking about re-signing. He's talking about he wants to go box somewhere else. It's not a title fight. It's not a contention or eliminators fight. That's not the kind of thing that we main event against anybody, regardless of who the opponent is. Would Chandler then change his mind? I'm only asking these questions because I want Chandler to have all of the information. Now, Chandler's a smart guy. He likely has all of the information, or at least he's asked the questions. But I don't believe there's some conspiracy where anybody's holding back. I believe that the organization would go, look, you know what we know. And if you're tired of waiting, we're tired too. If you want to fight somewhere else, we'll book you somewhere else. The only thing that we can assure you is that if he comes back, you will be his opponent. That's the only thing we can tell you. We don't know when that's going to be or even if that's going to be. I mean, I'm just sharing that I think the conversation probably went something like that with Chandler. And I'm not sure that Chandler would have the same calculation if he was aware that the big media feature fight that he believes he's waiting for is not going to headline the card. I think it's interesting. I think it's worth asking. And how long should Chandler wait? I feel like he has. I feel like he proved his resilience. I feel as though he did wait. I think it's getting close, and I think Connor is right there. Right? I don't think anybody is misleading Michael, but you still run into an issue of how long can that game be played. If you guys have ever heard me talk about this piece, you've heard I'm repeating myself. I'm being redundant, but that it keeps changing, and the spotlight put on that does appear to get stronger as each day goes by. It really does. It's all for naught. The last year and a half of Chandler's life is all for naught if he doesn't get the match. So I would really understand and support wherever he came from, as long as his eyes are wide open, as long as he has the information, as long as he is seeing. And I do believe that I'm right. Nobody's confirmed that, but I believe that I'm right. And you're talking about a lower placement on a card. And if your one and only motivation is the attention that you're going to get from the card, that is information that nobody's likely told you. But it's something that you do need to see and that you would, if you were Michael Chandler, need to consider. Summer is coming up, and that might mean that you're going to have a little more time on your hands. Why not use it to learn a new language? Rosetta Stone, the most trusted language learning program that truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, is here to help you. Some of you may be traveling abroad this summer, and you might want to experience that country beyond just the touristy type spots. Your experience could be upgraded just by learning the native language. Now you can download the Rosetta Stone app to your phone or tablet and learn on the go while driving, riding on the subway, running on a treadmill, or even laying poolside with just a 10-minute lesson per day. Rosetta Stone's lessons are designed for long-term retention of language skills rather than short-term memorization. The focus of the program is preparing you for real, authentic conversations, not just knowing a couple of translations. It's like having your own personal trainer for language learning. Rosetta Stone has been used by millions of people for over 3 decades. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started for a limited time. My listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off. Unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. That's a steal. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today. Chito Vera, what is going on? It's an interesting spot. Chito Vera is fun, and he does a good job with the media. I think you guys enjoyed the build-up to his fight with O'Malley. I think you enjoyed him enough that he even got the fight with O'Malley. I mean, Chito's one of these guys that really had to work his way back in. Don't forget, Chito had fought Sean. Chito beat Sean. Sean goes on to superstardom, largely of which he had even the night that he went into the Chito fight. Chito does not get much of a bounce for that. Sean goes on, main event, world title fights, all the Sean stuff that you've seen. And Chito had to catch him. And that's just not normally done that way, right? Chito beat him. He won the fight. I know there's more to it. I get there's more to it. But I'm just sharing with you, it's not generally done that way, so you could see where Chito would have a chip, but you would also understand why Cheeto's story is one for review. It's for one to study. How did he do it? And he did it largely because he's great with media. He won you guys over. He had a lot of fun. But coming out of this fight, he's done an equal amount of media about Sean. And it's just one that I would have to observe. I mean, one rule about fighting is you never quit talking. That is one rule. There's another one where you don't shine a spotlight on your deficits. Like, you will see people that are driving around town. They got John McCain for president bumper stickers, and you kind of go, well, you advertising a defeat. That election's over, and he lost. You're advertising a defeat, and it's strange. I mean, in all fairness. So when Cheeto keeps on bringing attention to the fight, in some ways he's breaking a rule, but he's consistent with another one, which is don't ever quit talking. Not to mention, it's interesting. He does have people thinking. Cheeto landed a body shot, and he's maintained that body shot would have stopped the fight. If this would have been a fight to the death, those are Cheeto's words, he would have won. And I'm not sure how we get to that conclusion, considering the fight landed during time and regulation and it didn't stop the fight. Like, I'm not quite sure how we get there. And so because of the ridiculousness of the statement, am I supposed to believe this is just entertainment and Cheeto is doing what we call a troll? He's purely trolling. And that's the part that I need to establish that. Right? So again, I want to work through this because Cheeto's got two big claims. And I can't tell if he's complained. I can't tell if he wants a review. I can't tell if he feels that he's been cheated. And I only can't tell that because of the body shot claim. Okay, so claim number two is that O'Malley was greased. That is illegal. That is against the rules. Now, Cheeto appeared to give O'Malley a way out, which would make me believe he's not accusing him of cheating. When Cheeto made the statement that O'Malley was greased and he was too slippery and therefore I, Cheeto, could not get my hands on him. When he made that statement, he then built in the alibi for Sean, which was his hair. That he had product in his hair. And that product came out and was of oily substance. Now that would not be cheating. You're allowed to do your hair. I mean, I'm only offering for you. That's where I didn't understand. Like, Cheeto has not accused Sean of cheating, even though he accused him of greasing, and greasing is illegal. He didn't accuse him of cheating. Are you with me? Are you with me on this? Because I do need you to understand that I can't tell what Cheeto's doing, and I think he's just out having fun. I think he's out trolling. I don't think he's making an excuse. I don't think he's blaming O'Malley. Whereas normally I would. But then Cheeto had another statement that made me think, okay, he's having fun because this one is simply fiction, which is Cheeto had a big body shot. Now, body shots are so painful. Oh my gosh. And they'll hurt you for a while. I mean, you can get hit in the liver and not be able to stand. Guy flips that liver over. I mean, oh my gosh, that can be so debilitating. I'll give you a great example. Bernard Hopkins did that to Oscar De La Hoya. Oscar De La Hoya is as good of a boxer as we've seen box. He's the Olympic champion. What, do you have six world championships? He has so many world championships, I can't recall them off the top of my head. Boom. Bernard stopped him. And I even remember De La Hoya after the fight, he just said how painful it was. And he said, I have what it takes. Believe me, as a fighter, I have what it takes to push forward. I could not move. It brought me down and froze my body up. And I'm only sharing that with you because that is the ability that body shots have. They are not later. There are shots that are later. There are leg kicks that you'll get that until you cool down, you don't feel. There's things that will happen to you in those fights that you'll never know that happened until you wake up the next morning. You guys ever been sunburned? Like, being sunburned, young people tell you, and you'll look in the mirror, and you'll see you're red, and you'll know you're sunburned, but you don't feel it until you fall asleep. You wake up the next day, oh my gosh, you can hardly move. Like, there's a lot of things in fighting that are like that. And I only share this with you because the body shot is not. It is now, right now. You're going to pay for it right now. And Cheeto landed a beautiful body shot on Sean, but none of those reactions that I just took a moment to explain to you happened. It did not bring Sean down. It did not put a hole in his gas tank. It did not make the car stop running. And it was a beautiful shot. But Cheeto has gotten confused. The reason that was isolated is there were so few beautiful shots that night done to Sean. So the compliment and the focus on the body shot wasn't to say this was such a great punch. It was to say for this fight, that was your best punch. Your best punch of the fight is not the same as that was a brutal and devastating shot. And Cheeto had said that if they were fighting to the death because of that body shot, Sean's family would be making funeral arrangements right now. It's a great line. I mean, that's a powerful and spooky line. Like, I feel like Cheeto is really interesting right now. I'm having fun with him. But because there's no truth to that, because Sean did not go down, because Sean was not unable to stand, like De La Hoya told us all, because his body did not freeze up and lock up, because Sean did not so much as say, ow, I need a moment, or stop throwing his own punches, because none of those things happened. I believe Cheeto is kidding, at least to a degree. I believe Cheeto, much like Sean, who appealed his first loss with the Sugar State Athletic Commission and got a favorable ruling. I believe much like that, Cheeto is now coming back with the devastating body shot. But I don't remember a time to speak about the body grace, because that is illegal. That is a very big claim. I mean, if Sean is getting ready to go in and fight Marab, who we all know is going to be grappling heavy and needs to get his hands on him and is going to want to get him down. I mean, this is like 1993 all over again with Stryker versus Grappler. Like, if we know that to be true, if Sean is an opponent who's accusing him of greasing, like, this is something that we would need to get to the bottom of right now. But I don't think that's what's happening. I think, in a very entertaining and fun way, I think that Cheeto is teasing. Has a special clause in his contract that will allow him to fight at UFC 301. Now, I don't buy that. In fact, not only do I not buy that, I am very comfortable in telling you that's not true. In fact, I even think I know why it's not true. But I do want you to know right here and now, before I go any further, I don't have the information. I am speculating and guessing. But for Pierre to put that in, it would seem as though he could just go to the UFC and say, I would like to fight at 301. Right? I mean, if 301 was so important to him because they're going to Brazil, if like that was so important to him, prior to having a main event at 300, it seems as though he would have been booked for 301 or he'd been told yes for 301. And then whatever happens, you find out you need him at 300, you got to go back to him and go, hey, man, we got to take you out 301 and we need you at 300. And he goes, wait a minute, I'll do this 300 thing for you, but if I'm okay, you've got to let me go to 301. Come on, please. So important for me to fight in my hometown. It would be something along those lines. It would not be a matter of, hey, Alex, we got to fight for you at 300. It's with Jamal Hill. You know we got to do that fight. You know it's you and Jamal next. We can get it done right here. And we're motivated to do so, and Jamal is motivated to do so. And he goes, all right, you know what? I'm going to do Jamal. I'm going to fight. I'm going to be pay-per-view. Biggest card of the year. I get participation as the champion. This is my biggest payday I've ever had. But man, you got to send me. You got to let me do 301. I don't care who the opponent is. I don't care who the match. I don't care anything about that. You got to let me go do 301. I don't buy that. Do you buy that? I mean, is there any part of that that seems reasonable? Not only for an athlete to want, but that the athlete would get, like the UFC just needs this match for 300 so badly that they would negotiate another competition in, all based on geographic location. Now, I'm only asking these questions not to go against the report. I'm asking these questions because if that did happen, we need to know. I mean, that would be amongst the most badass gangster moves that I have heard of. You can't get champions to fight. Do you know how hard it is to get fighters to fight? Do you know how bad these guys are whole life are telling everybody how tough they are and go to do this all, until they actually get signed and now you got to go into the tough guy business against other tough guys? When you make it to the UFC, when fighters find out that this is no longer about aggression, it's about fighting, which means I don't just come across and overwhelm you, some bum at the local park. I'm taking on another guy that's used to overwhelming bums at a local park. I'm taking on Do you know how hard it is to even get them in there? And then once you become champion, you go to the top of the bill, the training that goes into that, the stresses of making weight, the 5-round atmosphere. I mean, it's a completely different atmosphere. You're doing what everybody else is reluctant to do in the first place, and you're doing it for 70% more time. So if you have a champion that is willing, opponent unnamed, to have a fight and do a quick turnaround, take his skills, take his title, take it all, and put it against anybody. You're not promising him anything other than he gets that spot. This is the time. This is the time you bring in the guy that you don't think you could get him to negotiate with. You don't think you could get him to fight. This is the time when he's begging for a placement. Sight unseen. But I'm just sharing for you, if that story is true, I don't think it's true for the reasons I laid out. Boy, I hope it is. And if it is, we need confirmation. That would be amazing. If Pierre, and you must understand, fighters know who's going to win before the fight. When the music hits and you got red corner, blue corner walking, red corner and blue corner know who's going to win that fight. You as the fan that watches the media and the buildup has to do a good job seeing through those poker faces. Look in their eyes, hear their tone, and find out which one, because they're both going to say they're going to win, and they're confident they're going to stop. It's the best training camp ever. You're going to hear all of these things. Your job, if you're a bettor, is to find out between the two of them which one is bluffing. Because one of them is bluffing. So if Pierre has truly done that, then he is truly letting you know he believes he's going to win this fight. And the great fights, the ones that go down in history, are the exceptions to what I just said. There are not very many. But it is not a hard and fast absolute rule that both guys know who's going to win. It's not a hard and fast rule. You got luck, you got happenstance, you got performance, you've got that night, you got guys that get surprised. Give you a great example, but the night that Justin Gaethje, 246, the night that Justin Gaethje beat Tony Ferguson, there was nobody more surprised that Justin won that fight than Justin. And not only did he win, he won every second of it. But nobody was more surprised. And I'm just offering for you, if Pierre truly believes that he could beat Jamahal Hill to the point that he negotiated into his contract, I think that it's really interesting. Yeah, I do. And I think that's something you guys would like to know. And I think for a guy that has covered as much ground in as short of a period of time as Pierre, I have Pierre as Fighter of the Year for 2023. He won my vote. I got knocked out by Adesanya. People told me it was a silly vote. I disagree. In the calendar year 2023, Pierre was the 185-pound world champion. Within that same calendar year, he was the 205-pound world champion. That makes him Fighter of the Year, in my opinion. But either way, to be a double world champion, has he even had 10 fights? I mean, is he even in the double digits of fights? It is shocking how far he has come. And now if he can believe in himself to that ability and he wants to take it back home to Brazil, I mean, these are really incredible things. Because he can strengthen the card and his presence is going to make those people more happy and more proud. I mean, look what he's doing for somebody, or at least trying to do. I think that should elevate him. I think that'd really be an incredible thing. I just struggle with it because we knew they were going to Brazil. We knew 301. We knew the date. And there was no talk, there was no rumor, and there was no campaigning done by Pierre and company to get that date. Or was there? And he did it quietly. I mean, this is the kind of thing, and this is the kind of attitude. This could move the line. DraftKings has these guys pretty close right now. Pierre and Hill. Pierre is officially the favorite. Boy, it's tight. And it was some weird number. It's like a plus 113 to a minus 135 when I looked at this 2 days ago. I mean, it's tight. But it would be of great interest if he was that confident that he was already moving on. You got two kinds of athletes, right? You got one kind has to absolutely focus on something. And the moment you find out that guy is not focused, tear that ticket up because you're never going to the pay window. Never. gets his eye off the ball. You know, all of a sudden he's got these Hollywood celebrities showing up to cheering for him. He thinks that's actually his friends. They think he's actually his community. Like, you can watch a guy disconnect from reality and you know to not bet on him. But then you have other athletes where the worst thing in the world is focus. The absolute worst thing that that athlete can do is zero in. You got to keep them scattered. You got to let that ADD brain, you got to let it roam. You got to keep it playful. You got to keep it light. I don't know which one Pierre is. I haven't known him well enough or seen him enough, but you guys that follow him back in kickboxing know which one he is. And that detail, this one detail, if he actually has done that, that one detail has the ability to move the line, because some of you are going to hate it and think that he's overlooking Hill. And maybe he is that kind of guy, but maybe he's not. Maybe he's the kind where confidence is key with him. Maybe he's the kind where he's got to spread it around, look for other opportunities, not zero in on one thing. Looking down the road, looking at like a tournament. I'm in the semifinals. I go to the finals later. I mean, it's one of those things. You got to find out what kind of athlete you're dealing with. You got to find out if he actually did these things. It will change your opinion on the outcome of this fight. For good or bad, that's up to you. Tyson versus Jake Paul, a vast majority of fans believe Mike Tyson's not only going to beat Jake Paul, that he's going to knock him out. Ryan Harkness did a study, and I had never seen something just like this. And Ryan is always up to something clever. Like, if anyone was going to pull this off, it was Harkness. But I enjoyed it, and it was by nation. So we took the United States, a poll within the United States for boxing fans. But it was like 86% believe that Mike Tyson is going to not just win, not knock out Jake Paul. And the ones that don't, the ones that believe Jake Paul is going to win, are already saying because it's boxing and the fix is in. And I'm very comfortable in telling you, first off, there's no fix in, but I'm very comfortable in telling you if the fix was in. Right. Like, if you get these guys together and somebody's going to go over, somebody's going to go under. Right. This becomes a Vince McMahon scripted performance. Mike ain't going under. I just don't believe that. But I mean, I strongly don't believe that. And I have to give credit here. I assume that this is Jake Paul's promotion company. I assume this is Most Valuable that is putting this on. But one of the hardest things to do, I mean, promoting, being a promoter, having a successful event, my goodness, the hardest business, right? But to be able to see the future, because now you're talking about psychology of fans. I mean, this fight has not been out for 2 weeks. It's been out exactly 10 days, 9 days. It was so resisted when it came out 9 days ago. I remember where I was when I got this announcement. Name drop, but I was doing a show with Patrick Bet David. It pops up. We put it on the screen. I went home that day. I am locked down in a hotel. I'm out of Miami. I go to two different websites, ESPN.com, right? My website, where I work. And I go to TMZ Sports. And there were several other websites as well, but I'm going to use those two because you will recognize them. And neither of them said Tyson and Paul were fighting or boxing. They had a headline, but one of them said Mike Tyson signs to take on Jake Paul. And the other one said it's Mike Tyson versus Jake Paul. And I thought, okay, here's a tell. I'm the smartest guy in the room. I'm going to pick up on something that nobody else is. They're getting ready to do a big swerve, right? This is for some totally different company, and they're getting ready. This is a promotional push, and we'll find out in a couple of days, but don't be suckers, right? Don't get April Fool's here. There's a reason that the big guys, that the ESPN did not use the word fighter box. And I really thought that because it made so little sense. I had such a hard time believing it for many, many reasons. Possibly none stronger Then the fact that I know Jake Paul listens to you guys. You made it very clear to Jake Paul. No more retire, no more over the hill, no more MMA. He listened and stopped doing that. Also, the idea that this would be about cash for Tyson. Like, while yes, that's a part of it. I also knew some numbers that Mike had turned down. I knew a $20 million offer 3 years ago after he'd already gotten in shape, right after the Roy Jones fight, to take on Evander Holyfield that Mike turned down. I had a personal offer with Mike where we had signed paperwork to keep our mouths shut behind the scenes. Like, we'd gotten several steps in. Then he pulled it and said, I'm not boxing anymore. I'm done. It was his wife. His wife got involved. Said, nah, he's done. I'm not putting it back in there. And I only share that because we don't know what Mike is getting guaranteed for this one. We just know it's under $10 million. The way it was stated is it was high seven figures. So it was hard for me to believe that it was about money when I knew he had turned down other things that paid more money. And then you run into the problem of competition. What is it they're competing for, right? I mean, if you're just a diehard competitor, I never fought for money. I don't know anything about it. I hear it all the time. I don't know anything about it. I fought 50 men, stayed in the sport for 22 years. It was never, ever did I show up for the money. I wanted to compete. I wanted to compete. The only thing I hated about the sport. I only resent one thing. I resent that we only get three fights a year. So I just share that where I cannot relate to this. Now, if I'm right, if Mike's not doing it for the money, and if I'm also right that it's not fixed, it's not a promotional for anything, it's very straightforward, I do have to then admit that there's nothing competitive on the line. There's not a number one contendership. There's not a ranking. I mean, it has been stated that Jake Paul has no way to win. That if he loses to a 60-year-old, the gig is up. And if he beats a 60-year-old, it's not like that draws him right into Canelo. It's going to upset people because Mike Tyson is revered. I mean, these things are stated, right? We won't know the future till we get there. But what about for Mike? What is it that Mike has to gain? I mean, Mike had some resistance when he fought Roy because Roy was so small in comparison to heavyweights. And it was very little resistance, but that fight was never about anything more than Mike Tyson coming back. Let's see him come back. A once-in-a-lifetime attraction returns. And by the way, can he get back in shape? Can he get fit? Can he do one more? That's all that was about. There wasn't a human out there that was disappointed that was a draw. Very few of you who watched it remembered it was a draw until it just came out of my mouth a moment ago. Which is just proof the outcome did not matter. You were not watching for the outcome. You were not watching for a sporting event. You were not watching for titles or legacies. You were watching purely to see the comeback and if, in fact, he could come back. All right, great. Great storyline. Just doesn't happen twice, right? Every smart fighter will retire because you can't come back if you don't retire first. But you only get one. You only get one. So Mike will be fighting a much less experienced guy that is much smaller than him. I mean, it was the only saving grace why Mike didn't get teased for taking on Roy Jones, is Roy was so good and so decorated. And I only bring this to you, it's not to put down Mike, I'm just reminding you, Mike is in a very tough position, much like Jake, that it is a fight about nothing. So this is 9 days ago, and this is how we all felt. I'm just telling you, it's very different now. I mean, this fight is very different. And if Most Valuable is the ones that signed this, that's taking the risk and that's putting it on, they would definitely deserve credit for understanding psychology. It's the number one market indicator and mover that I have ever personally experienced. It's just very rare that you meet somebody that understands it. And they did call this one right, at least it appears. They're putting out training footage of Mike. And it's looking better and better. The first couple of tapes that came out of Mike, there was no sweat. We're led to believe that a whole workout had happened, but he forgot to splash water on his face first, right? Anthony Joshua is classic for that. He'll bring in the cameras and do some workout, but he's completely dry. So we, the audience, know this is nothing more than a photo shoot. And I only bring that because that's changing. And pretty soon, I imagine, we're going to see Mike Spar. See, I would really like to be a closer part of this. I would like to go and spar with Mike. And I'm afraid if I offer that, Mike will believe, because he only knows me from like talking trash and doing things like this. Like, he says that when he sees me. I know that he would respect me as a training partner. He would respect that I would come in, follow code. I'm here for you. This is your training camp. I'm here for you. But I would like to go spar with Mike, so that I could come back and tell you guys. So that I would personally have a feel for how serious it is. I get to see the whole camp. Let me get those couple of rounds in so I can feel them. But let me be part of it. Let me be in those closed doors and see. And then I'd like to get on an airplane and I would like to go spar with Jake Paul. I would like to be on the inside. I'd like to be able to see the training, the environment, the energy in the room. How serious are we taking this? And I would like those moments of feeling him in the ring. And then I would like to be able to come back and share with you guys and see, that's the part. Neither one of them would agree to that. Say, hey, man, this is private. If you're going to go leak this, if you're going to go tell the world. But I would like that permission from both of them. I would like them to make an exception. I'd like them to know that I'm not going to come out in my typical manner of where I'm trying to build a fight for myself. I'm going to come out in a very matter of fact. I'm going to give a real approach and a real assessment. I am wildly curious. When I watch Mike with Rafael Cordeiro, there's more going there than just his power. And I know people like to say, well, the power is the last thing to go. Shut up, because it's not. First off, it's just not true. So please stop with that. But Mike is doing some stuff, even on those 5 and 6, 8 second clips with Cordeiro. He's doing stuff with his foot movement. First off, nobody else ever did. Nobody else does now, but nobody else ever did. But I will just tell you, you lose that. I used to jump rope every single day. You go and you start jumping rope, but you're not doing it every day. It's just off. Your footwork's off. Your timing's off. Just there's things like this. And Mike never lost that. We've seen him shadow box a number of times. He goes in, he plays around with the guy, something like that. So he's worked with Francis and has been caught on camera, for example. But he's still doing that footwork. So there's a part of me that believes, hey, that he hasn't lost it. He's just an older guy. And I'm just sharing that I would like to feel. I would like permission. I'd like to come and be day of Mike's camp, and be a sparring partner. I'd like a permission, go do a day at Jake's camp and be a sparring partner. And fully admitting that when it's done, I'm going to come and talk to the world. I'm going to share with them my opinion. While that might not affect the match that is still a couple of months away, I think it'd be very interesting, and you would be very interested in where they at right now. All right, guys, that's it for today's episode. Thank you for listening. And shout out to Joey, who left a review on Apple Podcasts saying, whether it's in the courtroom, real estate, or MMA, JLP is the top salesman at any vertical. It's a great point, Joey. I'm not positive you used vertical correctly, but I like it, and maybe you did. Maybe you just taught me something. For the rest of you, enjoy your weekends. Come back on Tuesday. Tell them I'm Chael Sonnen. And you are welcome.